All right. Good morning to everybody. You know, I'm glad for you other nine folks that are here. Just standing here and preaching into that camera would be a little intimidating, but so I'm glad you're here, and welcome. Welcome everybody that's watching online, or whether they're calling in on the phone, however you're listening. We hope we can be a blessing to you today. Is that better, Dwayne? All right, you can open your Bibles to Daniel chapter 1. Who doesn't know this story? It's maybe the most popular story in the Bible, I don't know. I was going to read the whole first chapter. I think I'm going to shorten that a little bit. We're just going to read down through verse 8. There's some words in here I can't pronounce. But we're going to give it a whirl anyway. So starting in verse 1, in the third year of the reign of... See, I'm already caught up in words I can't pronounce. Anyway, this king of Judah came to Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, unto Jerusalem, and besieged it. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, the king of Judah, into his hand with part of the vessels of the house of God, which he carried into the land of Shinar, to the house of his God, and he brought the vessel into the treasure house of his God. And the king spoke unto Ashpenaz, the master of his eunuchs, that he should bring certain of the children of Israel, of the king's seed and of the princes, children in whom was no blemish, but well-favored and skillful in all wisdom, cunning in knowledge, and understanding science, and such as had ability in them to stand in the king's palace, and whom they might teach the learning and the tongue of the Chaldeans. And the king appointed them a daily provision of the king's meat and of the wine which he drank, so nourishing them 3 years. And at the end thereof, they might stand before the king. Now among these were the children of Judah, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, unto the prince of the eunuchs, unto whom the prince of the eunuchs gave names. For he gave unto Daniel the name Belshazzar, and to Hannah of Shadrach, and to Mishael of Meshach, and Azariah of Abednego. And verse 8 is what I wanted out of this chapter. But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's meat, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore he requested of the prince of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. So this message could have been called lots of different things, but I simply titled it Living with Purpose. So we have the story here of Daniel. He was kidnapped at a very young age. He was probably 15 to 17 years old, maybe as young as 13. And he was forced away into Babylon. He was carted off, probably over 1,000 miles away, the way that the road that they would have most likely traveled, it would have been 1,000 miles probably, been less than that as a crow flies, to what is now modern day Baghdad. And it was a Babylonian way of intimidating the countries into sending them tax money by kidnapping some of these people like this. Verse 4, you see they wanted good-looking, intelligent young men. And obviously Daniel and his three friends fit that description. So how would you like to have been Daniel, forced away by your captors, and you were supposed to work for them and be on their side? The Babylon king wanted young men that hopefully weren't set in their ways and that could be trained to learn the language and the ways of the Babylonian life. But we see in verse 8, Daniel purposed in his heart. What a man, what a young man that he could make such a statement like this. He was so far from home, from all that was familiar, and yet he made a purpose. He could easily have thrown his hands in the air and said, I'm far from home, nobody will ever know. I'm a political prisoner with no chance of going back. He could have said, if you can't lick them, join them. He could have said, welcome to the new me. I'm living their lifestyle because it'll be easier and I get to live a way better life. And why in the world would I want to be on the bad side of my captors? He could have said all of those things, but he didn't say that. I don't know if he had super good parents or if he was just a solid, well-grounded young man. There must have been some training in his life because he knew exactly what he stood for. He wasn't wishy-washy. He didn't think he might change his mind later. He didn't leave my room in his mind to back out if things got really bad. He knew exactly, beyond a shadow of a doubt, where he stood, and he had lines he was not going to cross. His name was changed by his captors, most likely to erase his Jewish connection and to honor their pagan gods. He was put through 3 years of schooling for indoctrination. And in all of this, he never forgot the purpose he made in his heart way back when he was taken captive. And he served the Babylonian king and then later the Persian king for about 60 years. And obviously, both kingdoms prospered under his advice because they kept him pretty handy for all their little problems. Was he living in ideal circumstances in a place he chose? Nope, he wasn't. But he made the absolute best of it. And isn't it interesting that he worked for a heathen king / enemy king, and he served them faithfully that long, and he still didn't lose his focus? Just a side note, I thought it was kind of interesting. He lived about the same time as Confucius in China, but they were about 4,000 miles apart. I don't know why I found that interesting, but it is kind of. So, what are we? Can we say we have focus like that in our life? Do we have purpose in our lives like this? Zig Ziglar calls it a wandering generality or a meaningful specific. Which one are we? Rabbi Daniel Lapson has a little more interesting way of saying it. He says, are we just a tennis ball floating down the gutter of life? You know, that's kind of an interesting description. Just a tennis ball floating down the gutter of life. And a lot of people in this whole world fall into that category. And if we're not honest with ourselves, sometimes I find myself slipping into that category. You know, sometimes I'm out doing my work, going about my business, and I'll show up at somebody's house at middle of the day, 10 o'clock, whatever, and they come out in their pajamas, and I'm like, you got to be kidding me. Don't you have enough? It's 10 o'clock. Now, if they're working night shift, I get it. Fine. But it seems like a lot of people are content just to take it easy, just sit around the house. And I think if those people are honest, they'd agree they don't feel happy or productive, but it's where they're at, and they're just content to sit there. So why are we here on this earth? What's our purpose? You know, I think that's a question mankind has been plagued with for a long time. Did God really put us here for a reason? Is there really a purpose for us here? Maybe we're just an accident? Maybe the list could go on. Maybe there's nothing here for us to do. Let's just get this straight right now. God personally created every person on this planet, and he put us all here for an exact specific reason and purpose. We might not always feel like it, but that's the truth. Listen to this verse in Exodus 9:16. And in very deed for this cause have I raised thee up to show thee my power and that my name may be declared throughout all the earth. And then there's a similar one in Romans 9:17. For the scripture saith unto Pharaoh, even for this same purpose have I raised thee up, that I might show my power in thee, and that my name might be declared throughout all the earth. So if nothing else, we're here to declare God's name in the earth, at the very least. But there's so much more we can do. We're capable of so much more if we just let ourselves, if we just throw ourselves into the effort. Don't be content with mediocre. Many people do just enough to squeak by, and that's it. Just enough to make it look kind of like they're trying, but don't get me out of my comfort zone too much. Whatever happened to doing everything heartily is under the Lord. I remember years ago that message Ernie preached. He carried a bat and an arrow up here, and I don't remember the title of the message, but it was something about doing everything with your might. That's the God we serve. He wants us to do everything we can to the best of our abilities. He doesn't like lukewarm. He says he spews it out of his mouth. In some ways, I want to be careful how I say this, but in some ways, it's nicer to see someone that's doing wrong, but they're fired up about it, instead of seeing someone that's doing the right thing, but they're half-hearted and slowpoke and not motivated, and they're, I mean, where's the fire? Let's get going, you know? 1 Peter 2, verse 9 says, "We are a chosen, ye are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a peculiar people, that you should show forth the praises of him who called you out of darkness into his marvelous light." That's what God created us for. That's why we're here. So, who wants to tell me? We're going to talk about a man here. Who wants to tell me, or who could guess what happened July 20th, 1969? All you people at home, you can scream into your computer screen. Maybe I can hear you, but I doubt it. It's probably going to have to come from one of these nine people here. Does anybody want to guess, or you know? July 20th, 1969. I'm kind of at an advantage because I have all the time in the world to look it up. But it was a great race back in those days between Russia and the U.S. They were trying to get somewhere, and U.S. managed to beat them. No idea? Go ahead, Tide. That was the landing on the moon. That's right. So what happened? Neil Armstrong, Buzz Aldridge, and Mike Collins went to the moon. Mike didn't. He actually drove the little car around the moon, and they were in another car that took off and landed on the moon. Then they went back up later and connected and all went home. But Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin stepped on the moon. They won America's space race. Now, we're going to talk about Buzz. He's still alive today, amazingly enough. And I want to talk about Buzz in a very non-judgmental way. I'm not trying to say the man's not a Christian. He had lots of Christian attributes in his life. We're just going to look at his life for a little bit. So he grew up in a religious household. He was a very bright, very disciplined young man that flew fighter jets in Korea. He knew an incredible lot about airplanes, mechanicking, engineering, and all that fun stuff that goes with it. He knew all about discipline, focus, and perseverance. He was a perfect fit for NASA, and so hence he got tapped on the shoulder for a NASA job. What a lucky guy, I guess. It depends how you want to look at it. Anyway, him along with Neil and Mike got the much coveted first trip to the moon. And what an amazing feat they accomplished. You know, I read his book, I think it's titled Magnificent Desolation. And some of the stuff they went through was amazing. So many things that could have went wrong. But they stayed focused. When things went wrong, they did their job, they kept going, and they did a good job of it. They did mess up a few things, like they were trying to crawl back into their lander on the moon, and Buzz had a sack of moon rocks, and he was thrashing around in his clumsy space outfit, and he took his sack of rocks and accidentally hit the switch and broke it off, the switch that fired the engine to lift them back off the moon. I mean, talk about bringing a pretty important thing that you really want to leave there. But he thrashed around with a sack of rocks and accidentally broke it. But him and along with Neil figured out you can take a pen and connect the two dots, and somehow they held this pen in here and fired the engines and took back off the moon. But anyway, little things like that happened. But they were very disciplined and they knew what they were to do. So, when they returned to Earth, they were immediately national heroes. They got to hang out with presidents and upper-class society. They got to be spokespeople for NASA and travel all over the country and give speeches and interviews and autographs that people wanted, and they had all the fame anybody could ask for. Now, here's where Buzz's life seemed to take a different spiral. I'm only human. I might have done the exact same thing he'd have done if I was in his shoes. He was still hanging on to his Christian roots. Interestingly enough, he served himself communion on the moon. I thought that was kind of interesting. I think he skipped the feet washing from what I hear. But something happened when he returned to Earth. In his own words, he fulfilled all his hopes and dreams, and there was nothing left to accomplish. And think about it. He went to the moon. This was the 1960s. What other physically challenging feat could there possibly be? So let's fast forward a little bit. Shortly after he returned and all the fanfare died down, he divorced his wife and the mother of his three children. He became an alcoholic. There were days he literally couldn't get out of bed. He became very depressed. He had to go on to medication for depression, which he got addicted to. He got remarried. He got divorced about a year later. He tried to pull himself up on his own bootstraps. He even became a car salesman for about 2 weeks of his life. So what happened? What happened that this very successful, disciplined, focused, highly educated man could fall into a pit like this? Did the fame go to his head? Did the money go to his head? Was it the lack of structure? Was it all of the above? What was it? Let me just tell you something about humans. We have a very unique need to feel useful and productive. If we don't feel useful and productive, we tend to go downhill pretty fast. He said in his book he felt like he was a puppet for NASA and he was sick of it. He lost his ever-learning way of life because, after all, he knew pretty much about everything, about his passion, about airplanes and space. And in fact, he had people coming to him to ask him what questions, and he was their teacher. He knew about everything about that world. He lost his structure and his highly scheduled life. So what can we learn from this story? What can we learn from this? So I have 6 points here to live with purpose, and we'll talk about Buzz a little later then. But let's start with point number one for living with purpose. I'll just tell you, you got to have Jesus as your base. If you don't have a base to go back to and always something that's solid that you can rely on, there's a lot of things that will come to our life that will distract us. And like I say, I'm not trying to make a judgment call on Buzz. The way he lived his life was his own choice. However, in his book, he makes little to no mention about about church life after coming back from the moon. Maybe that was one of the things. Maybe that was one of his shortcomings. And I know in society there are what we would call very successful people that are either atheist or agnostic, and they look successful. And it looks like they have it all together. But let me just suggest that I bet they could live a much better, higher quality life if they had Jesus as a base. We don't know what we have, that we have a Bible and a church and fellow human beings that believe like us to encourage us. We don't know what we have, I don't think. It's an amazing thing that can keep us going right. Sometimes we hear that the Christian life is so hard and it has so many struggles and how we have to give up our will and let Jesus take control. And let me tell you, those things are all true. The Christian life isn't always easy. But I'll tell you something else. I have not been a Christian and I have been a Christian, and it's a whole lot easier for me to live life as a Christian. It's not always pleasant. It's not always that I'm so happy to give up my will. But you know what? I remember the fear of death. I remember being miserable and selfish and proud. And you know what? Those are hard things to live with. And if you're surrendered to Jesus, it's a much more peace-filled life. I've lived both lives. Believe me, I know. Okay, going on to point number two. Have a schedule and a structure in your life. We humans, like I said before, need structure no matter what age we are. Just knowing what to expect next. You know, I love my job for a lot of reasons, but I like the structure it gives me. I know what time I need to get up in order to be there on time. I know what to expect when I get there. It gives me something to wake up for. And I tell you what I noticed about myself, as much as I love vacations, especially Christmas vacation when we have about 2 weeks off every year, that's the time when I tend to sleep in, and that's when my personal devotional life tends to slide backwards if I don't stay up on top of it. It's when my prayer life slides backwards because I tend to sleep in and there's not a whole lot to get up for. I mean, I love to be with my family. I love to go out and have a lot more free time. But that is when I tend to slide backwards, when I don't have that structure in my life. Sometimes even our routine might seem boring and mundane, and I just do the same thing every day. But that gives you a lot of structure. And if you're a person without structure out there, and you find yourself slipping in these habits, put some structure in your life. It makes a difference. Point number three, put some people in your life that can speak wisdom into you. If y'all are like me, you kind of like to be your own boss. You kind of like to think you can handle things on your own. But we need people around us that can see our blind spots. People that can lovingly tell you to straighten up, tell you when you're off the path. We need our church and our church family. Maybe you need a trusted, maybe there's someone you trust from another congregation, but find somebody that you know without a shadow of a doubt has your best interest in heart, and they love you and they want what's best for you, and they're willing to put their arm around you and bop you on the back of your head if you need to be straightened up. We need people like that in our lives. And just another thought with that, let's be those people. Let's be those people that can help others if we can. Let's be those people that want the best for others. All right, we'll go to point number four. Don't compare yourself among yourself. Bible says that's not wise, and it's so easy to do. It's so easy to look around and see other people's good things and their things that we want. I'll just tell you, if you do that, it distracts you from the good you have in your own life, and it brings discontentment. It does it to me every time if I start doing that. Have you ever noticed, me included, people post their fun times on WhatsApp status or wherever, whatever platform they want to use? They always post the pictures where it looks like life is a bed of roses, and they never post a picture of a 2-year-old laying in the floor throwing a temper tantrum. And I don't either. I don't blame them. But the only thing people ever post is their highlights. Makes you think nobody else ever has a bad day, and that's simply not the way it is. Everybody has their moments. Like I said before, those that compare themselves are not wise. Among themselves are not wise. That's not me that says that. That's God that says that. All right, number five for living with purpose is enjoy the moment. Sometimes we get so focused on our goals and we think that we have found our purpose, and we tend to forget the little moments in life. Spend time with your children, and I know y'all do, the ones that are here that are parents, but spend time with them. I hear so many people say, it's such a cliche thing to say, but they say it all the time. They always say they grow up so fast. I know y'all have heard that. And I agree with it. I can't believe I already have a 2-year-old boy. I mean, it seems like he was just born the other day. But it's true. They do grow up fast. Spend time with them. Eating together regularly as a family, it's a tradition that a lot of Americans are just kind of dropping by the wayside. They don't act like it's a big deal, but that's a big deal. Eat meals with your family. Take your drink to the front porch. Just hold still for a little bit. Take your coffee or your tea and just sit out there with your family and leave your phone in the house, for crying out loud. You can do without it for a little bit. Just slow down a little bit. I have to tell myself to do that every now and then because it's so easy not to. It's so easy not to. But just enjoy the little moments. All right, the last point I have here, point number 6. Have some boundaries in your life. Daniel purposed in his heart. He had definite lines he would not cross. You see that with the lion's den stories. He had friends in his life that had boundaries. You see that with the fiery furnace story. They had areas in their life that there was no room for compromise, and they would not cross that line even if it meant death. And that is a very good thing to have in your life. Know where those lines are. Figure out what those lines are in your life. Children do good when they have good, solid boundaries in their lives, and us adults do too. We could be so much more productive, I think, if we know exactly where our lines are and we will not cross it. So I told you I'm not going to leave old Buzz under the bus. He did get married for the third time, and he's still married today. He did go to Alcoholics Anonymous, and he did kick his drinking addiction. He's been dry many years. He did get a good psychiatrist, and he kicked his depression. He did find some things to involve in his life that gave him structure and a reason to live. And like I said before, I'm not going to judge Buzz in any way because he's only human, and who knows how I would have been responded. It's between him and God, and someday, it's between him and God, and someday, the way you live your life is going to be between you and God, whether you want to admit it or not. The way I live my life is going to be between me and God. So my challenge to all you folks here and watching, we were created for a purpose. God put us here because he needed you on this earth for a specific reason. And just live your life in a wholehearted way for God. That, just a wandering, aimless person through life feels so unproductive. And it's so easy to slip back into those ways. But just know you were created for a reason. You're here for a reason. God loves you, and you got what it takes. You can all do it. I'm going to read one final quote here from Mark Twain. He said, "The two most important days in your life are the day you are born and the day you find out why." And each of us has a why. We do. All right, we're going to have a prayer, and then we'll let Jonas close the service.